Today we're beginning here on the top of Kaf Bet Amud Aleph, six lines down. V'Tana Kama. Going back to the sheet of the Tana Kama, if we remember now, we have three different sheetot with regards to how we learned the information that we mentioned in yesterday's daf. We have the Tana Kama and Rabbi Yishmael, who seemingly are saying the same thing, which is that when you do the Olat Ha'Of, you have to sever both simanim completely in the process of doing or processing the Olat Ha'Of. And the sheet of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, we have to do Rosh Shnayim by the Olat Ha'Of, but you do not sever them completely. And that's the big distinction that we were looking for from the previous sugyot about the sheet of the Chachamim versus the sheet of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon as to how much you need to cut when it comes to the Olat Ha'Of. And that's a derivative of their reconciling between the psukim of Kamishpat, which is written by the Olat Ha'Of in the Korban Olevi Oreid, which indicates that it's compared to something. We had two options. One was that it's compared to the Chatat Behema, which led the Parshia of Olevi Oreid, or it was compared to the Chatat Ha'Of, which was immediately preceding it in that Parshia. Then we had the offsetting or the mitigating force of Vehikrivo, which is mentioned by the Olat Nidava, the Olat Ha'Of Nidava, which seems to indicate that it's unique and it's separate from a Chatat Ha'Of, and they have to distinguish in some way. The balance between those two results in the different positions that we had. So the Tana Kama said that Vehikrivo tells you don't learn Chatat Ha'Of like, don't learn Olat Ha'Of like Chatat Ha'Of. And then we had Kamishpat, which told you to make it like a Chatat Behema. But then we wanted to know exactly what that meant. And he brought Psukimu Malak Vihiktir, that there's a correlation between the Malika and the Haktara. Just like the Haktara means the severing of the head completely from the body. How much that is, Rashi says, simanim, but the or can still be attached. The Rambam believes it has to be completely severed from the body of the bird. So that severing that happens by the haktara also has to happen by the milika. And so the question the Gemara is asking right now is, according to the Tana Kama, you have two psukim telling you the same information. You have vihikrivo, which tells you that the Olat Ha'Of is distinct from the Chatat Ha'Of. Chatat Ha'Of only requires one siman. Vehikrivo tells you the Olat Ha'Of requires two simanim. You also have the pasuk Malak Vehiktir teaching you that just like Haktara, the head is separated from the guf, so too the Olat Ha'Of by the Malika has to separate the head from the guf. So you have two pieces of information telling you the same thing, which is that the head of the Olat Ha'Of has to be severed, which means two simanim. So that's what the Gemara wants to understand. Why do you need both of those? V'tana Kama. Ma'achar d'nafkalan mi'umalak vehiktir. If we already know that information from Umalak Vehiktir, Vehikrivo Lomali. What do I need Hikrivo for? Vihilav Vehikrivo. Had it not been for the word Vehikrivo, Hava Amina, my Kamishpat, then what do we do with the Kamishpat? Kimishpat Chatat Ha'Of. Then it would be similar to the Chatat Ha'Of. Yushum Umalak Vehiktir. Had you only had Malak Vehiktir, Hava Amina, Mahaktara Birosho Shom Izbeach, Af Melika Birosho Shom Izbeach. Just like the Haktara is on the top of the Mizbeach, so too the Malika should be done on the top of the Mizbeach. Hashta dichtiv rachmana vihikrivo. Now that we have the additional word vihikrivo, drosh beinami ha, that you have to add on this in addition to what we already know. So the question really is, you have Kamishpat, and then you have some mitigating force going against Kamishpat. The mitigating forces are two psukim. One is Vehikrivo, which says that the Olat Ha'Of is distinct from the Chatat Ha'Of. You also have this mitigating force, which is Umalak Vehiktir, which is that you have to do Melika, similar to the way that you do Haktara. So the question is, those two psukim, both the Vehikrivo, Umalak Vehiktir, that are mitigating against Kamishpat, how much pressure are they putting against the Kamishpat? So had it not been for the word Hikrivo, we could have reconciled the psukim. And we would have said that the Kamishpat means do it just like the Chatat Ha'Of. And the only little thing that we would have changed is Umalak Vehiktir teaches you, just like the Haktara of the Olat Ha'Of is done at the top of the Mizbeach, so too you have to do the Malika at the top of the Mizbeach. And that information would be the unique difference between the Chatat Ha'Of and the Olat Ha'Of, and otherwise they'd be all the same. So you could then have reconciled and said Kamishpat means Chatat Ha'Of, Olat Ha'Of are identical. Olat Ha'Of, what about Umalak Vehiktir? That's a unique aspect that since it's mukrav on the top of the Mizbeach and the dam is done on the top of the Mizbeach, so too the Malika is done on the top of the Mizbeach. And that would have been it. along comes the word v'hikrivo to tell you that it's a much more fundamental difference between the chatatov and the olatov. They're very different. They're so different that, first of all, Malach Bakhtir is going to teach us much more information. It's going to teach us not just where you would do the malika, but also how you would do the malika. In addition, then it'll tell us that the kamishpat is not about chatat ov, but rather about chatat behema. So hikrivo is an indicator to tell us that there is significant pushback against kamishpat, to say that the olat ov is very distinct from the chatat ov, and therefore I'm going to learn umalach mektir in its full force, which means not only just about where you do it, but also how you do it. And that's going to then give us the information that you do two simanim instead of one siman, rather than just about where on the Mizbeach you do the Malika for the Olat Ov. That's the necessity of the Hikrivo for the Tana Kama, even though you already have a Malach Vektir. As Rashi notes, Malach Vektir by itself could have been reconciled with a small, nuanced difference between them about where on the Mizbeach you process them, and then left everything else as being Chatat Ov and Olat Ov are equal. So Hikrivo comes to tell you this is a much deeper distinction, and therefore you're dashing Malach Vektir to its fullest extent. And that means that not only are we talking about location, but also about how you go about doing it. Chatat behema deino b'ayla min ha-chulin min alan. How do we know the fact that chatat behema only can come from chulin? Meaning that was the source of the Tana Kama when he says, when you compare the olat of to the chatat behema, that teaches you that it must come from the chulin. That presumes that the chatat behema, we know that it only comes from the chulin. Where do we know that from? Amar Rav Chista, Damakra, because it says by the par of Aaron on Yom Kippurim, v'kriv Aaron et par chatat asher lo, that he has to bring his korban chatat from his own monies, from it, at his own expense. Mishalo velo mishal zibur. Got to pay out of pocket and not use communal funds to pay for it. Velo shel mishal maaser. And not coming from monies of maaser sheni. So there's the what it means, chulin. Chulin means you can't bring it from something that, first of all, is not your own personal expense. It's got to be your personal expense. It's not a communal expense. But that's really not relevant to our sugya. The second piece is what's more relevant to our sugya, which is you have to bring it from chulin, monies that are not encumbered in any other way, and not from monies of maaser sheni. And as Rashi points out over here, there is a machloket with regards to the monies of maaser sheni. Rabbi Yehuda believes that mamon maaser sheni is chulin or mamon balin. Rabbi Meir believes that mamon maaser sheni is Mamon Gavoa. So according to Rabbi Meir, there's no question here that you can't bring it from Mamon Maaser Sheni, because that's Mamon Gavoa. You don't have a right to use it or utilize it at all. According to Rabbi Yehuda, who says it is Mamon Baalim, then you have a right to utilize the monies. If that's the case, you might have thought you could bring the Korban from the Ma'ot Maaser Sheni. Along comes the Pasuk of Asher Lo to teach you otherwise, that you may not do that. We discussed yesterday that the Baalei Tosafot believe that that Limud of Asher Lo is not simply a limud from the part of Yom Kippurim, but it's extraneous language. Because otherwise, then you end up in the same problem, which is, then you learn from Chatat Yom Kippurim to Chatat Be'ema, which would be a hekesh, and then you're trying to learn Olat Of from Chatat Be'ema, it would be a double hekesh. Then you'll be in the same bind that Rashi notes, that if you had learned it from Olat Of, from Chatat Of, from Chatat Be'ema, you're in a double hekesh. So the way to avoid that is to say that Asher Lo is completely extraneous, and therefore it teaches you in Chataot in general, that they have to come from Chulin and not from Maaser Sheni. Both the Ramban, the Baalei HaTosafot, all ask the question as to why you need a specific limud over here to teach you this information. The way that the Ramban says is that's a general principle, in that you don't need something uniquely here. Anytime it's something that is a chovah, it has to bam in a Chulin. We have a principle like that that's independent of Korbanot. Why do I need a special limud over here to tell me it comes from the Chulin when we have a general klal? You can't bring something that you're obliged to bring from something that is otherwise encumbered towards something else or for payment of something else, and therefore it has to come from the chulin. Why is there any question over here? The Ramban answers that over here, you might have thought that the chatat, the olat ha'of over here, is coming as part of a kurban olev yored. And the only thing that is excluded from this din of chovot is a chovat kavua. So only if it's a korban kavua is there this restriction against using the maaser money for purchasing such a korban, something that's a recurring obligation. For instance, the korbanot that you bring when you're oleh leregel. But something that comes on a chait, which is not something that's a given that you're going to have to bring it or that you're going to be obligated to do it because it has to be triggered by an action that you do, maybe that type of obligatory korban, which comes about from something else precipitating it, maybe ma'ot, ma'aseh sheni, would be allowed to be used in that case. And that's what the pasuk here comes to dispel and say, even for a korban olev yored, even for a korban chatat, one cannot use the ma'ot, ma'aseh sheni. The Baal HaTosafot in yesterday's daf, at the bottom of the Amud Aleph, asks, why do you need this at all? Isn't it obvious that you can't bring it? Because here we're speaking about olat ha'of. With regards to ma'ot ma'aseh sheni, we have the ability to bring things like shlamim with the ma'ot ma'aseh sheni. And that's because the mizbech has some participation in that, but parts of it are eaten by the balim, that are eaten by the kohanim, and that would be permitted. By olat ha'of, it's kulo kalil al mizbech. So what's the havamina that you could use ma'ot ma'aseh sheni for an olat ha'of if it's kulo kalil ala mizbeach? The only dispensation to bring a korban with ma'ot ma'aseh sheni is with something that's eaten, or something that has at least a portion or a large portion of the korban that's eaten. Over there, by olat ha'of, it's going entirely on the mizbeach. Why would you even have a havamina to suggest that it could be coming from ma'ot ma'aseh sheni? And he points out that in other places we exclude items just because of the fact that they're kulo kayat. They are entirely burnt on the mizbeach, and olat ha'of is no different than that. So the Chatzam Sofer actually gives a nice explanation, which is that if you think about the scenario here, you have a chatat behema that is being replaced by two birds. The chatat behema is normally eaten by the kohanim. The chalavim nadam go on the mizbeach, and the basar is eaten by the kohanim. So that is something that at least we toyed with. And the Ramban had mentioned the fact that maybe that could come from ma'ot ma'aseh sheni. Here the pasuk tells you otherwise. Now, when you come to the olat ha'of and the chatat ha'of, they're replacing the chatat be'ema. And in a sense, they bifurcated the two sides of the chatat. The parts of the emurim that go on the mizbeach, that's taken over by the olat ha'of. The parts that are eaten of the chatat be'ema, that's taken over by the chatat ha'of. Because the chatat ha'of is kulo eaten, nothing goes on the mizbeach, and the olat ha'of is kulo ala mizbeach. So the two of them together combined then create or simulate what the chatat behema was. And that's what the Chatam Sofer says is the havamin over here. Since the olat ha'of here is really in part of a package of olat ha'of and chatat ha'of, maybe you could use ma'ot ma'aseh sheni over here. Along comes the pasuk to tell you no. Meaning that first of all, chatat behema has to come from chulin. And then we had the hekesh of kamishpat to teach you that that's true not only by the chatat behema, it's also true by the olat ha'of as well in this scenario. Now, for Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who don't have kachatat referencing to the chatat behema, but rather referencing to the chatat ha'of, where do they know this din of chulin from? How do they know this din? So Rashi and Tosafot argue about this. Rashi suggests that it comes from Zot HaTorah, which is the hekesh between all korbanot. And Rashi says the machloket between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shmuel is, when can you use Zot HaTorah? The Tanna Kamma or the Rabbanim believe you can't use it with birds. You can only use it with behemot. And that hekesh is only relevant by behemot, not by birds. And that's why he needs a separate limud over here for olat ha'of. Rabbi Shmuel disagrees and says you can use it by birds as well. And therefore he's going to use Zot HaTorah to teach him that information. Baal HaTosafot, as we mentioned yesterday, don't love that explanation because we find other instances where oaf is included in that hekesh. So he says that the machloket actually revolves around whether you can use Zot HaTorah for something that's not relevant by all korbanot. In general, the principle is that that hekesh of Zot HaTorah is used when it is a feature of korbanot that applies to all korbanot. By definition, mina chulin is not relevant by all korbanot. It's relevant by korbanot chovah. It's relevant by korbanot of neder. Things where you have an obligation to discharge. But korbanei nedava in Ochanavi can't come from ma'aseh sheni. You can't bring ma'aseh sheni as a korban shlamim. So since it's not applicable across the board, that's the question. The Tanna Kamma says, therefore it can't be subject to Zot HaTorah that hekesh. Therefore I need a separate limud of kamishpat kechatat behema. Whereas Rabbi Shmuel says that, okay, it doesn't apply to all korbanot. But all korbanot that are nedarim and chovah, it does apply to. Anything that it's relevant to, the din applies to. And therefore you can use the hekesh of Zot HaTorah. That is how Rabbi Shmuel would disagree with the Rabbanan and not require kechatat to do that. And we would assume that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon would learn it in the same manner as Rabbi Yishmael. Then we move on to Bayom. You have to bring it during the day. That was one of the three things that the Tanna Kamma and the Rabbanan learned from the Hekesh between Olat Ha'of to Chatat Behema. That we already know from the Pasuk in Parshat Tzav, which we quote regularly. Bayom Tzavoto Nafka. From the day that you're commanded. That Yom, which is written there, by the Miluim at the summary pasuk says that Biyom Tzavoto means that the dinim of Kodoshim and doing avoda in the Mikdash only apply during the day. That's a generic, all-encompassing statement. Why do I need something specific here if I already have that? And the Gemara says, Kidei Naspo. You're right, Enochanami. We don't need this limud. It was just brought down as a package of issues that we are addressing, but this really is taken care of by Beyom Tzavoto. We don't learn it from Chatat Beima. That means all three of the Tanaim here are going to learn it out of Beyom Tzavoto. The fact that the Tanakama mentioned it was just as a throw-in, but it's not that we actually learn it from there. Yadoa Yimanit, the third thing that he learned from Chatat Beima was the fact that you have to do it with your right hand. Midarava Barbachana Nafka. Why do I need a special limud from Chatat Beima? You can learn it out of Rabba Barachana. Dama Rabba Barachana. I'm Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Kol Malkum Shenemar Etzpa O Kuhuna. Eino Eli Yamin. Anytime you have the mention of the word Kuhuna or Etzpa, by definition, it means the right hand. That we learn out from the Midei Korbanot HaMitzorah. So from there, we establish in Binyanav that anytime the word Kohen or the word Etzpa appears, there is a requirement for Yamin. And that's true in our case here by the Olat Ha'Ov. There's a requirement of Kohen by Olat Ha'Ov. And if there's a requirement of Kohen, by definition, that means it has to be done with the right hand. So why do I need a separate limud to teach me that it has to be done with the right hand? Ve'idach kihuna bayi etzba, etzba lo bayi kihuna. So idach really refers to the shita of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon's shita is that it's not enough to have the word Kohen. You need the word Kohen and etzba to be there. You need both words in order to have the necessity for right. And so over here, that's what it's for. It's for Rabbi Shimon Shita. In Achaname, the Shita of the Rabbonon, we don't need this because you would have learned it out of the word Kohen that already exists in Olat Ha'Ov. The Gemara and other places that the Baal Tosafot will point out say that in Achaname, it's Kedei Naspa also. And according to the Chachamim, it was just brought down as an aside. The real limud here is for Chulin. That was the major limud that you get from Chatat Be'ema. Bayom and Yamin are just brought down as Kedei Naspa. Our Gemara does not answer that way. Our Gemara says it's for Rabbi Shimon. If you hold like Rabbi Shimon that you need Kohen and Etzpa, then you don't have that in this instance. You have Kohen, you don't have Etzpa, and so therefore you have to then learn right from something else. That has to be from the Kamishpat that compares the Olat Ha'Ov to the Chatat Be'ema, and therefore that's the necessity for it here. So obviously, Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon will just learn it out of Rabbi Barchanam, Rabbi Shimon Lakish. The fact that it mentions V'kivah Kohen, Kohen's mentioned here, so that's how we know Yamin already. And I don't need the limud. In the end, the machloket really revolves around chulin. How do we know chulin? And that's the necessity of chatat beima, according to the Tanakhama, according to the Rabbana, according to Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon. Chulin we could have learned from Zota Torah, which is the hekesh between all the korbanot, and they differ with the Tanakhama as we discussed before as to whether you can invoke that hekesh over here. And that's why they have a difference in opinion. But that's why both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon say Kamishpat is about Chatat O, and not about Chatat Beima, because they don't need that limud of Chulin. And then they have their differences in opinion based on the residual, which is the fact that, according to Rabbi Yishmael, at least according to Rashi, the reason that he believes that there's a distinction between Olat O and Chatat O, it comes from the word Vehikrivo. But then he's relying, or he's still attaching himself to Umalak Mektir of the Tanakhama, and through that he knows what the extent of Vehikrivo is. That's how Rashi learns. That's Rashi mentioned yesterday that Rabbi Shmuel also subscribes to this Umalak Diktir. The Baal HaTosafot on today's daf are less sanguine about that, and they say they don't think that it has anything to do with Umalak Diktir. Rather, the Svar Be'alma. It's a logical reason that he did it, in that you have a Kamishpat telling you, be like a Chatato, and you have Hikrivo telling you, don't be like a Chatato. How do I know what to include and what to exclude? So Rashi says, Umalak Viktir tells you what to include and what to exclude. Tosafot says he doesn't think that's right. He thinks it's just logical because it makes more sense to include things like location of where you do the Malika and to exclude things like the Simanim. And then he says, you can see from what we're going to about to learn in the Gemara, that there are certain things that the Gemara takes for granted that are logical and that everybody learns, even though there's no explicit pasuk that tells us or information that tells us that that's the case, which is the next line of the Gemara, the Tanakhama, Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon, Mimul Oref, Minalohu. How do they know that the Melika has to be done at the nape of the neck? According to Rabbi Shmuel, that's exactly what the Kechatata Of is, or Kamishpat. Kamishpat teaches you, Machatata Of Mimul Oref, Afalata Of Mimul Oref. That's exactly what Kamishpat teaches you. But the Rabban, or the Tanakhama, and Rabbi Lezer, Rabbi Shimon, who don't have that, how do they know they have to do it, Mimul Oref? So the answer is, we know who? Gamrei Malika Mimalika. The Malika that's mentioned by the Chatat Ha'Ov then teaches us about the Malika by the Chatat Ha'Ov. As Rashi says, it's not a Gzeres Shava, but rather a Mei Matzinu, because you don't want it to be Gzeres Shava. If it's a Gzeres Shava, then you would have to learn it much more distinctly, and then you would have to bring the Malika of Siman Echad, would have to also move over. He says it's just a Mei Matzinu. So Tosafot uses that as his proof that you see here that there are certain things that we are willing to say are parallel between Chatat Ha'Ov and Chatat Ha'Ov, without any kamishpat, without every vihikrivo, we just have it that we assume that certain things make sense to include. And that's how he says Rabbi Shmuel knows that the thing to include was mula oref, and the thing to exclude was the simanim. Rashi says it's because of malach v'ktir, it says it's just logical, and you see that by the way we answer the gemara over here. Everybody agrees that mula oref is the location, even though we don't have any indication that you should compare the two. We discussed yesterday that the Ramban says that it's logical because of the fact that this is something inherent to the Malika, that this is something where location is something so integral and inherent to Malika that makes sense that you would compare those two versus things like Siman Echad v'Shnei Simanim, which are somewhat detached from the Malika itself inherently, but just about the extent of what you're trying to do. Like Shechita, when you do Siman Echad v'Shnei Simanim, that's not inherent to the Shechita. That's just what do you need in a certain circumstance. The fact that you cut Shechita from the neck, that's integral to the Shechita. And same thing with Malika. The location of the Malika is an integral part of the Malika, and therefore it's more logical to do it in that way. That is the layout of the three Tanaim that we saw. As far as there's any difference between them, it's clear that the Rabbonon believe that you do Shnei Simanim. We already discussed that the Rambam believes that Shnei Simanim means complete severing of the head. Rashi says the Shnei Simanim, we can leave the or attached, and that's what we saw in the Gemarot on Daf Chof, which is that you only have to cut the things that are subject to Shechita, or Me'akev the Shechita, that's what you have to cut here in the Malika. And therefore skin, which is not Me'akev Shechita, it's not a problem to be left on during the Malika. And so that's Rashi's view, and based on those Gemaros before. The Rambam, on the other hand, believes you have to sever completely the head, Umalak Be'ktir, which makes it sound like you have to completely sever the head from the body. That's the Sheet of the Rabbonon. The Sheet of Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, is Rov Shnayim, and that's based on his Kamishpat versus Vehikrivo, how he balances between those two, and that lands him in a position where he says that the Chatat Ha'Ov, just like the Chatat Ha'Ov has the head attached to the body, so too the Olat Ha'Ov has to have the head attached to the body, and therefore he says Rov Simanim, and that's it, not Rov, and you can do all, but you have to just do Rov Simanim, Rov to Simanim by the Olat Ha'Ov, and then we have Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel seemingly is identical to the Chachamim. It's just a different method of how he gets there. But seemingly he says that you cut both Simanim and that's it. There is a Lechem Mishnah on the Rambam over there who wants to suggest that there is a Nafkamina between them. And he wants to say that the Rabbonon believe that you sever the head completely. And that's the source for the Rambam Shita. And Rabbi Shmuel is the one who says that you sever the Simanim but leave the skin attached. And he is the source of all those positions that we saw in Daf Chof, which were the ones that said that you only have to cut the Makom that's Me'akev by Shechita. So he's going to then assign Rabbi Shmuel to those opinions. The difficulty, and as the Lechem Mishnah points out with that, is that he's then saying that Rabbi Shmuel, who's found in our Braita, is called the Rabbonon on the previous Amud. And then the Rabbonon that we'd say later are a different Rabbonon than we're talking about over there. That's a little bit difficult, and he says to himself it's a Dochak. But he says otherwise, what's the difference between the Rabbonon and Rabbi Shmuel? There's no difference. It might be Mashma'ut Dorshim, but he wants to suggest that there might be an Afkamina, and that also might be the source for the Rambam's position as to why he ignored those Gemaras and Daf Chof and went with Umalak Viktir, and that's because he thinks the Rabbonon disagree with Rabbi Shmuel exactly on that point. All right, now we move on to the next Mishnah as to which birds are kasher for the bringing of the korbanot ha'of. Kasher b'torim. Those that are kasher by the torim are pasul b'bnei yonah, are disqualified when it comes to the b'nei yonah. Kasher b'bnei yonah. That which is qualified by the b'nei yonah, pasul b'torim, are no good by the torim. Now, torim and b'nei yonah are the two birds that are allowed to be brought on the mizbeach in the mikdash. The definition of what they are, B'nei Yonah could be one of two things. It could be B'nei means young, and Yonah would then be a dove, so then it would be young doves. That would be the definition of the word. Or it could be a noun phrase, which is that it's B'nei Yonah. B'nei Yonah is a species rather than the young Yonah, and then you would have assumed that it was a pigeon. So that's the way many people bring the pictures of the B'nei Yonah. They don't bring them as young doves, they bring them actually as pigeons and say B'nei Yonah is a terminology for the pigeon. The torim, most people translate as being a turtle dove. Second of all, what the Mishnah says is that the ages differ over here. it's coming from the usage of the word b'nei. B'nei means young. So what the Mishnah assumes over here is that b'nei yuna is a reference to young ones, and torim is to mature ones. And that's what it's saying here. That which is kasher b'torim, meaning that the mature birds, they are pasul b'nei yuna. Then it doesn't work for b'nei yuna, because only the youngsters are okay by b'nei yuna. That which is kasher b'nei yuna, the youngsters, that's pasul b'torim. That is disqualified by the torim, because there you can only use mature birds. As to why that is the case, might have to do simply the fact that these birds are the most commonly found, and it's the easiest to get them, and that's why the Torah made them available. The Rambam in Mor Nebuchim makes such a comment. And the Rambam also adds the fact that the meat of the Torim is much tastier when they're older, and it would imply the same thing, that the Bnei Yonah are tastier when they are younger. The Ramban al Torah discusses the possibility of these birds being the ones that are chosen because of the nature of the birds, which is that the Torim are very monogamous, and therefore, even when they get to be older, they still remain dedicated to their spouse. And even if their spouse dies, they will not, quote-unquote, remarry. They will not join up with another bird. And that uniqueness about the Torim represents the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael. And then Bnei Yonah, which, when they get older, are not monogamous. They're very, quote-unquote, jealous, and therefore they do separate away from their partners. But when they're younger, the Bnei Yonah provide a lot of excitement and love inside of the nest, and therefore that's a very special, loving relationship, and that's why they're used as Bnei Yonah. That's what the Ramban al Torah claims is the reason that we choose these for the birds that are brought on the Mizbeach. Obviously, it is Gzeirat HaKatuv. The question is, can we bring meaning to the Gzeirat HaKatuv over here? That's the reason for Bnei Yonah and Torim. Then the Mishnah says, Tchilat HaTzihuv Bazeh Ubazeh Pasul. That it has a starting of yellow that is Pasul by both Torim and Bnei Yonah. So Tchilat HaTzihuv is obviously the transitional phase for both of them. The transition from Ktanim to Gdolim by the Bnei Yonah, and that's why when you already have Tchilat Tzihuv, you can no longer bring the Bnei Yonah. It's also the beginning of the maturity by the Torim, which means you can't bring the Torim until they've reached full maturity. So this is the beginning of that process. They haven't reached that point of maturity in Tchilat Tzihuv, and therefore it's Pasul by both of them, because there's a transitional phrase. The Gemara will ask at the end of today's daf whether that is a Safek, or is that really a transitional phase which has no category. It's not young, it's not mature, it sits somewhere in between. That will lead us to other items like that, including the palges, which we will then see also as the same question in that transitional phase. What is the status of the palges? Tan Rabbanan, Torim Gidolim Kshirim Tanim Psulim. So we have a braita that basically states explicitly what's mentioned in our Mishnah, which is that the Torim are, when they're mature, they are kasher. Tanim, when they are youngsters, they are psulim. Bnei Yonah, Tanim, when they are youngsters, Ksherim, Gidolim, when they are mature, they are Psulim, Nimtza, and therefore, in conclusion, what our Mishnah says is, Kasher b'Torim, Pasul b'Bnei Yonah, that which is good by the Torim, the mature ones, are Pasul b'Bnei Yonah, Kasher b'Bnei Yonah, that which is good by the Bnei Yonah, the youngsters, is Pasul b'Torim, doesn't work by the Torim. So, Tan Rabbanan, Torim, Gidolim, Velok Tanim. When it comes to what we learn from the Psukim, the conclusion we get to, this is classic Tanaic setup, which is they gave you the answer in the beginning, and then they're going to go to challenge it, which is, the conclusion is that Torim only apply by Gdolim, not by Ktanim. Sheyachol habalo dinhu. Tosfot over here makes an interesting comment. He says that the Gemara over here confused two different issues. And he says there must be a Girsa problem. So many of the Rishonim do change the Girsa or work with the Girsa over here, which is that Sheyachol and halo dinhu are two different forms of Limud that work in the exact opposite direction. And that is, if you look in Tosfot, he says Sheyachol dinhu. Nowhere else in the Tanaic works do we ever find these two put together in the same breath. Shiachol mashmo. What is the meaning of shiachol? Dilav haikra lo hava mina hachi. Had it not been for the pasuk, I would never have thought that. When the language goes shiachol, that's a Tanaic term that tells you, had it not been for the pasuk, I would have learned something totally different. That's the way that yachol means. Halo dinhu is the other way around. Lo Dinhu says, I don't need the pasuk that you brought because I could have learned it logically by myself. I would have had a kal v'chomer. So I would have had some logical argument that would have gotten me to the same place even without the pasuk. So Tosfot points out, there are mechanisms that are just the opposite. One says, I need the pasuk, because otherwise I would have thought otherwise. The other one says, I don't need the pasuk, because I would have known the information anyway. So how do you put the two of them together? Sheyachol alo dinu. You don't, can't have both of them together. So the Baal Tosafot, in the end, read it that it's sheyachol, that it is, had it not been for the pasuk, I would have not thought this. And that is sheyachol alo dinu. Uma b'nei Yonah. When it comes to b'nei Yonah, shelo hukshiru bigdolim, where their mature ones do not go on the mizbeach, hukshiru bigtanim, then by the ktanim they are mukshar. Torim shehukshiru bigdolim enudin shehukshiru bigtanim. Then by the torim that are good by the big ones, isn't it clear that they should also include the small ones or the immature ones? The Talmud Omar, torim gidolim velo ktanim. That's the puzzle. The puzzle comes to teach you something you wouldn't have otherwise known. Just Torim means the big ones and not the small ones. The Bnei Yonah, Ktanim, Velo Gdolim. And again, here you have it in the reverse. Bnei Yonah, you would never have known, had it not been for the pasuk, that the Ktanim are the only ones that are qualified, and not Gdolim. Sheachol, Alo Dinu. Again, here you have the mix of the two words. Baitos would say Sheachol means that that's the way it should be read. Matorim, Shluch Shru Biktanim, Shru Bigdolim. By the Torim, where the youngsters are no good, but the mature ones are good, Bnei Yonah Shukshu Biktanim, Bnei Yonah, which are good by the Ktanim, Enudin Shukshu Bigdolim, certainly they should be good with the mature ones, Tamalomer, Bnei Yonah, Ktanim, Velo Gdolim. That it's the small ones, the youngsters, and not the big ones. My Talmudah. What exactly went on in this Braita? And what information that the Braita provide that makes you change your mind? What in the Pasuk made it that way? So Amarova, Lodishtamit kra, velichtov. Why didn't the pasuk in any place or location write min bnei atorim o min hayonah? Why doesn't it write the opposite? Instead of bnei yonah and torim, why doesn't it write bnei torim o min yonah? There is an alternate girsa you can see in the Shita Mekubetzet, which was that why didn't it write min bnei torim o min bnei yonah? That it could have said bnei by both of them. The Gemara's answer is that the psukim always use the term bnei yonah and torim, and therefore, there must be something significant about the fact that it calls one Bnei Yonah, and it calls the other one Torim. That's the difference is that Bnei Yonah mean youngsters, and Torim mean mature ones and not youngsters. Now, there's a number of stages here in the Gemara, and the question is, how do these stages work? The Rashi begins the Gemara with stating that, Ilav dichtiv Torim, had you never written the word Torim, habiyalfina midina dektanim dekshirim, I would have learned from Bnei Yonah that it is kasher. That's how Rashi starts the Gemara. The Gemara says, had it never written Torim from Bnei Yonah, I would have assumed that Torim means anything, including youngsters. Tosafot raises a very basic question, which is, if Torim wasn't mentioned in the Torah, how would you know that Torim are Ksherim? You need Torim in the Torah, at least to get you through stage one, which is to know that Torim are even Kasher to start with. So how is it that you're asking me, had it just written Bnei Yonah, Torim would have been assumed? So that's where we came back to that idea that since Torim and Bnei Yonah are very commonly found, and they're animals that are hunted. So both of those issues are the types of animals that are brought as korbanot. We would have assumed that Torim are considered to be a kosher korban. Given that, then we would have assumed if we just had Bnei Yonah, that Torim would have included both the mature ones and the youngsters. Because as Rashi says already, that Torim, by definition, means mature, and Bnei Yonah means youngsters. Had it been absent, the Torim was not mentioned there, then I would have assumed Bnei Yonah also influences Torim as well. That's how Rashi starts the Sugya. So then Rashi says that the Gemara's question does not relate to whether Bnei Yonah mean youngsters and Torim mean more mature. That's a given. The question of the Gemara is, how do we know that that is me'akev? That's what Rashi says over here. Mi'u ikuva minolon. How do we know that that's me'akev? How do you know Bnei Yonah is just not a suggestion? And it is Me'akev, and same thing with Torim. How do you know it's not just a suggestion, it's Me'akev? You would need a duplication of that in order for it to be something that is. So that's the answer of the Gemara. That numerous times throughout the Torah, it says Bnei Yonah and Torim, and it never deviates from that language. So that's what Rashi says. Rashi says over and over again, the Torah says Bnei Yonah, Torim, Bnei Yonah, Torim. That duplication, repetition of the terminology tells you that the din is this way and no other way. Had it in any other place changed it and said Bnei Torim and Yonah, that would have undermined that thesis. But the fact that it never changes it, always does it that way, then it is a given that it's Me'akev because of the fact that it repeats it always in this manner. The Baal HaTosafot start out differently, and they say you have to have the word Torim. Without the word Torim, you would never have gotten off the ground. The Gemara's question is, why doesn't the Torah write Torim separate from Bnei Yonah? Had it been that Bnei Yonah and Torim were not juxtaposed, rather Torim were written somewhere else in the Torah and Bnei Yonah were written here, then I would have come to the conclusion that Bnei Yonah would influence what the meaning of Torim is. And Tosfot over here says, not like Rashi, that it's coming to ask the question of Ikuva Minolan. That's not the question of the Gemara. The Gemara wants to know, not just Ikuva, but wants to know practically. If Torim and Bnei Yonah mean that originally, then what do you need any help for over here? So Tosfot says, we don't know what Torim mean. And now that we don't know what Torim mean, it's going to be influenced by where they're placed. If they're placed next to Bnei Yonah, that tells you that it's contrasted with Bnei Yonah. I mean, Torim means only mature and not youngsters. On the other hand, if Torim is placed somewhere else in the Torah, then you would have a situation in which Torim could be independent. Torim means any bird that's a Tor. A Tor can be from day one, it could be when it's mature. Bnei Yonah would tell you that even though it just says Torim over here, Bnei Torim would have been included as well. And so the Havamina is that Torim should include a much broader breadth of birds than simply mature birds. And that's because you could have written them separately. The answer of the Gemara is that they were written juxtaposed. The fact that Torim and Bnei Yonah are written together shows you that. Now, that means that Lo Shtameh Kra, Tosfot says, is Al-Kachay La-Mishum Di'ikah Habei Mikrot. Nothing to do with the number of psukim that kadarish. It's not, as Rashi says, it's because it's duplicated. That's what makes the me'akin. Tosfot's not looking for the ikuv. He's looking for this hekesh between them. And he says it has nothing to do with the fact that the pasuk's repeated numerous times, because if one time it was written, we would have learnt this din. It has to do with the juxtaposition of the two rather than them being separate. And that's what the limud or the Talmudah is over here, is the fact that the Torah is put next to the Bnei Yonah. And that's the basic idea of the Gemara over here, is that Bnei Yonah influences heavily what we think Torim mean. And because they're put together, the contrast between them tells me that Torim is not youngsters and only mature ones. Now the Gemara suggests maybe we could read this in another way, which is Ema Bnei Yonah Dichtibu Rachmana Bnei Ktanim in Gedolim Lo. Maybe by Bnei Yonah, where it specifies Bnei, there's a qualification. It has to be a youngster. Torim, where it doesn't have that qualification, Ibai Gedolim Laiti, Ibai Ktanim Laiti. Then you have a choice. You can bring mature ones, you can bring youngsters, because it doesn't define, it doesn't qualify it. My answers, and this is really the limud, which is dumya, the Bnei Yonah. It's similar to Bnei Yonah. Ma Bnei Yonah ktanim en gdolim lo. Aftorim gdolim en ktanim lo. It is the contrast between them that really triggers this limud, which is that the fact that it writes Bnei Yonah in contrast to Torim, that are always together with each other, never once says Bnei Torim, and never once says just Yonah, that shows you Bnei Yonah is Davka. It also means that Torim are Davka. And given that, Torim have to be only mature birds, and Bnei Yonah are only youngsters. Tan Rabbanan, Yachol Yehei Kol HaTorim V'chol Bnei Yonah K'sherim. You would think that all Torim and all the Yonim are K'sherim. Talmud Omar, Min HaTorim V'lo Kol HaTorim. You bring from Min, we've seen this many times before, from amongst. That means that not every one of them is good, only some amongst the many, you could take out some of them. Min Bnei Yonah, V'lo Kol Bnei Yonah. Prat, that comes to teach you or exclude Tchilat HaTzihuv Shebezeh U'Shebezeh Shepasu, to exclude the scenario of where they are starting to yellow in both of them. That doesn't work. So there's a question about what the beginning of yellow is. Some suggest that the beginning of the yellow is when the birds themselves have a yellowish tint to them, meaning that their feathers, for the Yonah, let's start with that, it's easier. The youngsters, when they're very immature, the original feathers, you can see that many birds, are very white, they're very pale, and then they only darken, the plumage darkens over time. The problem with that is, for the Bnei Yonah, it happens very fast, which means that after a couple of days, let's say a week, their plumage has already changed color, and Tchilat Zihuv would not give you very much time to have Bnei Yonah. And so therefore there's a view that the Tchilat Zihuv is not actually about the color of the plumage, but rather the tips of the feathers. The tips of the feathers remain a lighter color for a good 5-6 months with the Bnei Yonah, and only afterwards do they start to become much darker. And that's the Tchilat Zihuv, and that would make more sense, because that would give you a larger amount of time, or a reasonable amount of time, where you could bring the Bnei Yonah. To say it's only a couple of days that you could bring the Bnei Yonah doesn't make sense. So that's probably what Tchilat Zihuv means there. And by the Torim, that would also be the idea of what's the change that causes them to be viewed as being mature, which is that you have to cross over. The Tchilat Zihuv, when their feathers still have that lightness to them, it changes and comes darker. Now, the color is not going to be exactly the same. We're going to see that in 1 second. So then, Me'ematai HaTorim K'sherim. When are the Torim K'sherim? Mishiyaz Hivu. When they become golden. So here you have a change in color, meaning that there's a lighter Zihuv, which is yellow, Tzahuv, and then they become Yazhivu, they become golden. So the change in the Torim is from this paler color to a deeper, darker color, but they're in the same spectrum. I mean, it's yellow, gold. That's where you are. And that's the point here. The tzihuv, the yellow side of this, is pasul by both of them. That means by the Bnei Yonah, once they start to have that yellowish tint to their ends of their feathers, that's already an indication that they've matured out. And for the Torim, that means that the beginning of their maturity process, but only once they reach the golden state, does that mean that they are fully mature. So, me'imaretai b'nei yonah psulim, mishyatzivu, and b'nei yonah disqualified once they have this yellowish tint at the end of their feathers. Tani Yaakov karcha, me'imaretai b'nei yonah kasherim, what is the minimum age of a b'nei yonah to be kasher? Mishi al'u, that when they reach the point of al'u, hu tani la, bu amar la. So he had a mesorah about this from his Rebbe, but then we don't know what the word ya'al'u means. We have, it's a nice word, it's not what we've seen till now in the Mishnayot. So what's the meaning of it? So he said, he brought the Mishnah, and then he explained it. Efruchav ya'al'u dam. It's young ones, they already suckle on blood. It's a reference to the nisharim. It's a reference to the eagles, or if the nesh is really a vulture, it's the point at which the efruchav can swallow, when they can already take down the blood that's eaten by the older or more mature nesher. And that's what Tosafot brings over here. Ya'alu dam, he brings two explanations for that. One is ya'alu from the Aramaic, tsela mitargiminan il'a, that he says that the word that's used over here in Iyov is really an Aramaic word that was borrowed or used in the Hebrew language, which means tsela, the ribs. V'hainu mishya'alu de shamit gadfa v'atidam mitzalot. That's a case where if the birds reach their maturity, where if you pull off the wing or a feather from the side of the bird, it would bleed, that they're so well now entrenched in the bird. It's so matured that when you pluck feathers, it causes bleeding. Early on, when you pluck feathers from the bird, it doesn't have that impact. So that's what it means, the maturity. Menachem ben Saruk brings a different interpretation, which is the one that we said, which is blia, livloa, means to swallow. And it's once they reach the point where they can swallow, in the pasuk there, it means swallow the blood, which is what their parents eat. So then, once they can do that, that's already a sign of that maturity or that threshold. So that's, he says, is the threshold. Again, it's an emat. When does that happen? Amar Abaye, mifishamit gad faminei v'atidamo. That's the sign. When you pluck a feather or you pluck off a wing and it bleeds, that's an indication of you've reached that point. So that's what Tosfot said before, that the word ya'alu means tzela, means a rib, means that from the side of the body that you're pulling something off. Otherwise, if it's swallowing, Abaye is just giving you an indication of when that is true. When do they start swallowing? Here's another way to know this. Two simanim over here as to indicate what is the minimum age of a b'nei yonah to be kasher. Torim aren't kasher until much later. They have to be mature. The b'nei yonah are kasher as youngsters. By behemoth, the Torah tells us that you have to wait 8 days before a behemah can be brought on the mizbeach. Rashi says over here that it'd be ma'us to bring a bird when it's such a youngster. There has to be some form of maturity here before you bring it on the mizbeach. To bring a little chick on the mizbeach doesn't make sense. And so there's got to be a minimum threshold at which point you can start. That's what we're saying here. The b'nei yonah have to reach a point where either they swallow or when you pluck their feathers, they bleed. That's the minimum age requirement for b'nei yonah. Then they graduate out, mishitachilo yatsibu, once they start to go yellow. Bayi Rabbi Zeira. Ha'omer harei alai ola mina torim u mina b'nei yonah, vevi tchilat tzivuv shebezeh upeshebezeh mahu. So this is really the core question that we noted in the Mishnah, which is here someone took a neder. Their neder involved bringing Torim and B'nei Yonah. They gave themselves the option. I have the option to bring from either one of these species. So then they brought Tchilat Zihuv by the B'nei Yonah and Tchilat Zihuv by the Torim. Question is, did you discharge your obligation in this case? Is it Sfeik Ahavi, Benofik? It is a Safek, and since it is a Safek, then if you got one of the two, you got right. We don't know if Tchilat Zihuv is a Gadol or a Katan. But one of the two is true, and if it is a Katan, then you discharge your obligation with the B'nai Yonah. If it is a Gadol, then you discharge your obligation with the Torah. But Miman of Shach, you got it right, because it is a Safik. Odilma Birya Havid Velonafik. Or maybe it's its own entity. There's this transitional phase where it is an entity that is neither a youngster nor a mature bird, and that interim stage is neither B'nai Yonah, nor is it a Torah. And it's disqualified completely. And that means that it wouldn't work at all. And you would not discharge your obligation. Tosafot asks the basic question over here is, how did you bring the korbanot? How did you bring both birds? One of the two birds here is disqualified. So yes, you brought both of them. You just start your obligation with one of them. But the other one was a pasul korban. So how do you bring a pasul korban in the mikdash? So Tosfot gives three answers. First one is, case where b'diavad, they already brought the korban oath. We want to know if he discharged the nether. Inami, kevin she'vion the other kohen, yatsa yidei nidro, me'achar d'makom makom, achad mehem ra'u l'hakrif. That once he hands them over to the kohen, even though we can't necessarily put them on his back, he's discharged his obligation because he brought something that was ra'u the mizbeach, discharged his nether. The kohen's in a bind now. He doesn't know which one to put on the mizbeach, but mimarav shach, he discharged his obligation. And then he gives a third answer, Yesh mefarshim debebama airi. We're speaking about a bama, and on a bama, you don't have restrictions. He brings from the Yushalmi the possibility that the bamot were open to banging of chayot, and even other birds like chickens and other things on the bama. In the end, the Baal Tosfot backpedal from this and say that that's only by a bama of Ben Noach. But a bama of Israel does have these requirements, but at least in the Havamina, he has a suggestion that this is a case of a bama. And that's how he deals with the fact that one of these korbanot is a korban pasul. If it was a bama, then it wouldn't matter. There's the question, did he discharge his nether or did he not discharge his nether? All right, so now the question is, Amar Rava, Tashma, that says, Prat l'tchilat tatzihu shebezeh shebezeh shepasul. I amart bishlama birya havi shapir. If you tell me that it's a birya, it's its own stage, which is independent of being a youngster or a mature one, then it makes sense that tchilat tzihu is pasul bazeh, if it is a safek, as whether it's a katan or a gadol, it's trich kralim ute safeka. You need a pasuk when it says minatorim umina bnei yona to come and teach you that tchilat zihuv is no good. As Rashi says over here, ain't safeka kamesh mayo. For the Kodesh Baruch Hu, he knows. If it's a safek as to whether tchilat zihuv means it's still a youngster or means that it is mature, it's a gadol, we don't know, but Hashem does know. It's our issue that we don't know. We're just lacking that information. You don't need a pasuk in the Torah to come tell you can't do this. The truth is, if you knew it was a gadol, you could do it. If you knew it was a katan, you could do it. Now you don't know. But because you don't know, that's why you can't do it. It has nothing to do with a specific pasuk telling you you can't do this. And so the Rava says that you can't invoke a pasuk to exclude a safek. Tosafot over here, he sees a massive Tosafot dealing with this throughout Shas, which is sometimes we do find that we use psukim to eliminate a safek. And so Tosafot lays out a principle over here, which is worthwhile knowing. Zeish tomar, the chos sfeika. Anytime you have a safek, the e of shar lehit barer, that it was impossible for you to ever know. Kamo, gabe baheret, umaser. When it comes to a baheret, whether the hair came before the baheret, or the baheret came before the hair, or maser, when something jumped back into the corral after it already went out and was counted, to the famim, shuhu kach, or the babim, shuhu binyan acher. Over there, sometimes it's one way, sometimes it's the other way. I mean, that there's a real safek over here. Whether the hair came before the hair came before the hair. And no two circumstances will be the same. You could have the safek in one instance, and the answer to that will be the behar came first. You could have that safek in another case, and it could be the hair came first. Or the case of the maser, it jumps back in. One time it'll be the third one, one time it'll be the fifth one. You don't know. There's just no way you're going to know this information. Then, shayich nemu'ute mikra shapir, mitam shem safek. Then it makes sense there that a pasuk would exclude such a thing, because over there the safek is not generated by a lack of knowledge about the particular item. It's about the situation that we don't know. And therefore the pasuk will come to tell you, when you're faced with this situation, this is what you do. Because these are circumstances that people in life will bump into. There the pasuk might come along to exclude it. V'hocha, efshar lebarer, sveika, zo, t'chol t'chilat zihuv shavin. Over here the safek is a unidirectional safek, which is either it is or it isn't. Any time you have a bird that has tchilat zihuv, it either is a gadol or katan. No two will be different. They are all the same, and the same answer will apply by all of them. B'kamei shmaya galio. Then, Kodesh Baruch Hu knows, imhem tanim agdolim. B'chein b'koi upalges, which we're going to do with tomorrow, kulan shavin. All of them have the exact same hagdara, exact same outcome. It's not a safek in the situation. It's a safek in our knowledge, our ability to discern in this case. Hilkach. Then you're not going to need a pasuk about something that is clear to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not clear to us. You're not going to make a pasuk to solve that. The first one is a case where it's a safek in the situation, meaning that the outcome could be different in different situations. So towards addressing a circumstance or a situation and saying when you're faced with this situation, this is the way to deal with it. So there the Torah will deal with safek, because that's reality, that's human reality. In a case where the lack of our knowledge or information is what generates the safek, and the outcome would be the exact same in all those scenarios. Over there, you don't need a pasuk to tell you that. The Torah, or Hashem, knows which one's the gadol, which one's the katan. We don't know. But it's always the same, and the answer will be the same in every case. In that case, you won't have a poster that comes and excludes it. So it's an important cloud that the Tosfot lays out as to when a Torah will address the Safek or won't address the Safek. But Rava's question is, why do you need Bnei Yonah, Mina Torim, to exclude it when if it's just a Safek, it must be that it's a Birya Bifnei Atzma. The Gemara says, Ki Itztrich Kra Lima'ute Nirba V'Ne'avat. So when we need the Pasuk is to exclude a Nirba Ne'avat, which are disqualifications by Korban, bestiality, and Avodah Zarah. Now bestiality comes in two forms. There's a Roveya and a Nirba. By birds, there's no such thing as a Roveya, so it's only a Nirba. That's why it only mentions Nirba over here. There's a Ne'avat, which was that it was worshipped, that is a Avodah Zarah. Both of those are disqualifying features for a Korban. And what it's telling us here, the Min Torim, Umin Bnei Yonah, is teaching us that those two items, you can't bring all Torim, you can't bring all Bnei Yonah, because there are some that are disqualified. And those are the Nirba, the Ne'avat. Now, Tosafot over here says, Tema, the Soter Stama Deshash, Drosha de Braita. We just had a Braita. And the simple meaning of the Braita is that Bnei Yonah, Min Torim, comes to exclude Tchilat Sihu. And we're now upending that Braita, and basically saying that Braita didn't mean what it said. Kedei Ledchot Rayato, in order to disprove what Rava is saying. Mukalei Kra, the Drasha Acheret. We're moving the Pasuk to a different Drasha. The Tosafot says, I don't understand this. There are times when you can say that, okay, the Braita learned it this way, you have another Braita learns otherwise. The Braita didn't exactly mean this. But over here, the Braita is explicit about what it means, because the Braita said that shows its Birya Bifnei Atzma. And now we want to say Rava's wrong. Say, no, maybe it's just a fake. And you know how we'll deal with that? The Min Yon Bnei Yonah, I mean, Torim means something totally different. It's a different drasha. What do you mean a different drasha? The Braita tells you what the drasha is that it's bringing. Just to disprove Rava, we're willing to then upend the Braita. The Rashi mentions over here, Va'afa Gav, the Tanak Tani Prat, the Tchilat Sihuv. What about the fact that the Braita specifically mentioned explicitly Tchilat Sihuv is what it's excluding? It says Asmachta Ba'amo. Then he makes it into Asmachta Ba'amo. What Rashi does with the Tosafot's question is say, yeah, Ein Okanami, the Braita mentioned it, but he didn't really mean it. It was just an Asmachta Ba'amo. The real limud from there is to exclude Nirba Minavad. Tosafot is bothered by the fact that you would take a Braita and then totally upend the Braita and say that the Lima doesn't exist because you want to undermine Rava's proof from the Braita. So Tosafot is very bothered by that. So the first answer that the Balei HaTosafot give is that in the Hava Mina, the Gemara assumed that you need a Pasuk to exclude Birya. And therefore it assumed that that was what the Braita was doing. But then after we learned that you need the Min to teach you about Nirba V'Nevad, now we're suggesting that you don't need a pasuk for Birya anymore, because Memela Yimayit, it would have been excluded anyways, because you mentioned Torim and Bnei Yonah have to be Ktanim, and Torim have to be Dafta Gedolim, then Mimonov Shoch, it would have excluded that. And therefore, you wouldn't have needed a pasuk to exclude the Birya. And so now when the Braita comes along, it gives you that explanation, it's an Asmachta Be'alma, whether it was a Safek or whether it was a Birya. In either case, it's an asmachta, because you don't need a pasuk in either case. And based on that, now the Gemara says, we don't have any proof to Rava's position from the Braita, because the Braita is not saying that we need a pasuk to exclude Birya. That's the first way Tosafot answers it. And then he brings from Rav Aaron Mirig Spork, that you have Min HaTorim Umin Bnei Yonah, that you have two Mins over here. So there, Rav Aaron Mibrishberg says that one of them teaches you both Nirba V'Ne'avat, and the other one teaches you about Tchilat Sihuv. So his suggestion is that one of the Mins comes to exclude Nirba V'Ne'avat, and the other one comes to exclude Tchilat Sihuv. Now Tchilat Sihuv then would either be Gadol or Katan that it's excluding. We're just not sure which one it is. But it's only one of the two birds are excluded. If it's a Katan that's excluded, then it would exclude the Torim. If it was a Gadol, then it would exclude the Bnei Yonah. So it's our failure here, because there is a Miut in the Pasuk, and the Miut is telling us that either it is a Gadol or it is a Katan, and there's only one Pasuk telling you that. And so therefore it's telling you either it is a Gadol or it's a Katan. We just don't know that information, and that's what generates the Safek. And if you still believe that it is a Birya, you still have that word Min there to exclude it as a Birya. And therefore, the Maskana, you have both a Min to exclude Nirba V'Ne'avad, and a Min either to exclude if it's a Birya, or to tell you that it's a Katan or a Gadol. But then the Pasuk's not addressing a Safek Kameshmaya, it's giving you a rule by them. We just don't know how to apply the rule, and that's why there's a Safek now, and then it's not approved to Rova, because it's not certain that the pasuk speaking about a birya could be speaking about that it's either defined tchilat yov as gadol or katan, but we don't know which side to apply it to. We don't know which one it is, and therefore we don't know which of the two mins, was it the min torim or the min b'nei yonah, that was that drasha, and therefore we don't know how to apply it. And that's how the braita moves forward, maintaining its original structure without being a proof to rova. Although Tosafot, in the end, seems to back away from that explanation because he says it seems more logical. The fact that you have min torim and min b'nei yonah, it seems that they are both excluding the same thing. Whether it's nirveh v'nevat or it's birya, they're both saying the same thing. That just applies both to b'nei yonah and to torim. And he thinks that's the more logical way to explain the min and the min here, rather than saying one min is for this and one min is for that, and then cross-pollinating them. So then the Gemara says, Sakadat kamino uchtiv, why do I need the mute nirbav and nevat? Why aren't they subsumed under the din of any korban or korban v'nehema? Why is there something unique about the bird that you would say that they don't have this disqualification? So Sakadat kamino uchtiv ki mashchatam bahem mumbam, that there is a correlation between mashchatem bam and mumbam. V'tana b'nei Yishmael, Tana debay Rabbi Yishmael, kol makom shenemar hashchata. Anytime the Torah uses the word hashchata, destruction or corruption, inu elo dvar erva, pavodat kochavim. It's a reference to avodah zarah and erva, arayot. Dvar erva dichtiv, we know that from the Dora Mabul, ki yishchit kol basar et dako al aretz. All living beings had degraded their ways, had perverted their ways in the land. We know at the end of Parshat Bereshit, it says there that Vayiru bnei Elohim et benot Adam ki tovot heina vayichud hem nashim mekol asher bacharu. And we darshan on that, mekol asher bacharu means people were taking the wives of other people, they was that arayot were rampant, and that's ki yishkit kol basar dako al aretz. You see the word hashkata is associated with erva. So over there it says that maybe you will again take up these destructive, corrupt behavior, and then you'll engage in avodah zarah. So I would have thought, since there's this hekesh between mashkatam behem, which refers to erva and avodah zarah, and mumbam, so that hekesh teaches you that anything that has a problem with a mum, then avodah zarah and erva cause a problem as well. These birds, since mum doesn't impact them, damar mar, because we have a memra, tamut zichrut bebeima. By behema, it has to be tamim, because the word tamim is mentioned by behemoth, and gender makes a difference by behemoth. Be'ein tamut, v'zichrut bofot. By a fot, there's no mention of the word tamim, there's no mention of gender. And so therefore, by birds, we don't care about mumim, and we don't care about gender. So from there, you would assume, just like it has no din of mumim, ema dvar erva v'dat kochvim, nami lo lipsobo. So too, these disqualifications also would be waived because of the hekesh between mum and hashkata. Kamash malan, that's what min ha-torim, u-min ha-bnei yonah, comes to teach you that they are still excluded, despite the fact that mumim are not impactful. Nevertheless, erva and avodah zarah are still disqualifications of the birds, and that's why you need nirbah v'ne'avah to be excluded from ofot in particular, even though we already know that in general about korbanot, because birds you might have assumed were different, because just like mumim don't impact birds, so too these issues would not impact. Therefore, the puzzle comes to tell you that despite the fact that mumim don't impact, avodah zarah and erva still do impact. Rashi over here says, "Ktiv tamim zachar by abeima." Writes tamim zachar of of lo ktiv be lo tamim lo zachar. None of those are mentioned. Hilkach lo pasli behu mumim ktanim. By birds, small mumim don't impact. Kagon dokim shayin el mumim gdolim kagon mechuser eiver. Things when you have significant mumim in a bird, they are impactful. Mishum hakriveyu na lepecha techa, because of the pasuk that says you can't bring your lowly things to Hakadosh Baruch Hu, meaning you think Hashem wants those types of korbanot. The Baal Tosafot are bothered by that and say it's nothing to do with hakriveyu na lepecha techa. There's actually a limud min ha'of. Min ha'of teaches you that mechutzer eiver excluded. We have another miut that tells us mechutzer eiver is excluded. And he says, im tomar lamali kra lipsol mechutzer eiver avavu b'nei noach nami asur. B'nei noach also are excluded from mechutzer eiver. So why do you have to teach me by a Jew that mechutz sefer is no good? Because we have a principle in the Gemara and Sanhedrin lays out, which is whatever is usher for a goy has to be usher for Yisrael. It can't be that it's usher for the goy and mutter for the Yisrael. And so over here, if Bnei Noach already are restricted in bringing mechutz sefer, certainly Jews are restricted in bringing mechutz sefer. So Tosafot says, well, there's also a principle there mentioned in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, which is any mitzvah that was given before Matan Torah and not repeated after Matan Torah, applies to Yisrael and not to a Ben Noach. The only way that something applies to a Ben Noach is if the mitzvah was again repeated after Har Sinai. So over here, if you had just left it with the instruction by the Bnei Noach, that Mechutzer Eiver is disqualified, the fact that it's not repeated after Har Sinai means that it's no longer applicable to Bnei Noach, it's only applicable to Yisrael. When you repeat it after Mamad Har Sinai, that means that there's a din of Ben Noach of Mechutzer Eiver, and there's a din by the Jew of Mechutzer Eiver, and that's why you need a pasuk to teach you that information. But he says it comes from the pasuk of Minahof, and not from the general principle of Harkriveu Nalapecha Techa, that Hashem will want that. That's not the source here. The source is that we have a specific limud that tells us otherwise. Okay, we're going to stop here about 2/3 of the way down on Chav Gimel Amud Aleph.